Chapter 21. For Private Percy, faced by his row of impassive singing strangers in the green of his unsmashed forest, the penny had quickly dropped. Of course, they had to be Russians. The Russians were in the war now, weren't they? And hadn't there been a copy of Punch magazine passed around in the trenches which showed Russians looking, yes, just like bears? His granddad, who had been a Percy too, had once been taken prisoner in the Crimea, and he was always ready to talk about the Russians to an attentive boy.
"Stank they did, lad. Dirty sods to a man. Savages, to my mind. And some of them from God knows where in the wilds. Well, I've never seen the like. So much fur, and beards a man could keep a goat in. Except I would warrant the goat would leap out straight away, being particular about the company it kept. But they could sing, lad. Stinky know they was. They could sing. Better than the Welsh. Oh, yeah. They could sing. But if you hadn't been told, you would have thought they were animals."
Now Percy looked at the row of hairy, emotionless, but not particularly hostile faces, and said boldly,
"Me, English Tommy, yes? On your side. Long live the Tsar!"
This won some polite attention, with the hairy men looking at one another. Maybe they wanted another song. After all, hadn't his mother told him that music was the universal language? And at least they weren't imprisoning him, or shooting him, or such like. So he gave them a resounding chorus of Tipperary, and finished by saluting and crying,
"God save the King!"
Whereupon, the Russians surprised him by waving their heavy great hands in the air and booming,
"God save the King!"
with considerable enthusiasm, their voices sounding like men shouting into a tunnel. Then they put their shaggy heads together as if reaching a conclusion, and once again broke into Pack Up Your Troubles. Only this wasn't the same kit bag, and nor were they the same troubles. Private Percy tried hard to understand what he was listening to. Oh yes, the song was there. But they sang it like a Sunday choir. Somehow the singers took his song apart, so that it gained a strange life of its own. Harmonies that broke and twisted into one another like mating eels, and then came apart again in another bubble rush of sound. And yet it was still good old Pack Up Your Troubles. No, it was a better Pack Up Your Troubles. It was more, well, there, more real. Private Percy had never heard music like it, and clapped his hands, and so did the Russians, with a sound like heavy artillery. They clapped as enthusiastically as they sang, possibly more so. And now it occurred to Percy that last night's crayfish had been more of a snack than a meal. Well, if these Russians were his friends, then maybe they had some Russian rations to share. They looked bulky enough under those furry greatcoats. It had to be worth a try. So Percy rubbed his stomach, poked his finger suggestively in his mouth, and looked hopeful. After their singing, again they huddled amongst themselves, and the only sounds he could make out were whispers as faint as a gnat, that tiny annoying whine that keeps you awake at night. However, once they had reached some sort of accord, they burst into song again. This time it was whistles and trills, very much like impressions of birds, and good impressions at that. A touch of nightingale, a hint of starling, birdsong that flowed like the best dawn chorus he had ever heard. Still, somehow he got the impression that they were talking, or rather singing, about him. Then one of them walked closer to him, watched carefully by the others, and sang in the voice of Percy, Tipperary, perfectly. All the way through, and it was his own voice, he was certain. His mother would have known it. After that, a couple of Russians disappeared into the woods, leaving the rest sitting around Percy placidly. When Percy sat on the ground with the Russians, waves of tiredness suddenly washed over him. He'd had years of war, and not even a day of this peaceful green, and maybe he deserved a little nap. So he drank a few scoops of water from the river and, despite the presence of the hairy Russians all around him, lay down on the grass and closed his eyes. He surfaced only slowly from his nap. Private Percy was a practical and methodical young man, and therefore, still lying in the grass, he decided, in this waking dream, not to worry about these Russians, as long as the Russians weren't trying to kill him. "Save your worrying for your boots, boys," the veterans always said. Boots? So his sleepy brain reminded him. They were the thing. Look after your boots, and your boots would look after you. He had always spent a lot of time thinking about his boots. At this point, it occurred to Private Percy, waking slowly, still somewhat battered by his war, and adrift in time and space, to wonder if he still had any legs on which to hang those boots. You could lose your legs and not know until the shock wore off, or so he'd been told. It was like poor old Mac, who never knew his feet had gone until he tried to stand up. He remembered walking around this forest, of course he did, but maybe that was all a dream, as like as not. And maybe he was back in the mud and the blood after all. And so he tried gingerly to pull himself upright, and was cheered by the realization that at least he appeared to have both hands. Shifting gently, he moved his aching body until he could rise enough to see, yes, boots. Blessed boots. Apparently on legs that were probably his, and as a bonus, apparently still attached to him. They could be treacherous, could boots, just like legs. Like the time when a 40-pounder hit a box of ammunition, and he was part of the detail that had to go and sort things out. The sergeant had been a bit quiet, and uncharacteristically soothing, when Percy was in distress, because even though he found a boot lying in the churned-up mud, he couldn't find a man's leg to go with said boot. And the sergeant had said, patting Percy on the shoulder, "Well, lad, seeing as he has no head either, I reckon he won't notice, don't you? Just stick to doing what I told you, lad. Pay books, watches, letters, anything that can identify the poor sods. And then stick 'em looking up over the top of the trench. Yes, lad, stick those dead bodies up there. They might take a bullet, but as sure as salvation they won't feel anything where they've gone, and there will be one bullet less for you or me. Good lad. Fancy a toss of rum? It's the medicine for what ails you." So the discovery of feet, his own feet, still attached as per, exhilarated Private Percy, known to his chums as Pimple, because when your name is really and truly Percy Blackknee, pronounced Black Knee, and you still have bad acne in your 20s, you accept Pimple as a nickname, and are grateful that it wasn't anything worse. He lay back again, and must have dozed off for a while. The next time he opened his eyes, it was still full daylight, and he was thirsty. He sat up. The Russians were still here, patiently watching, looking at him almost kindly through those furry faces, he thought. Maybe his head was clearing a bit. It occurred to him for the first time that he ought to have a good look at his kit. He opened up his kit bag and emptied out the contents on the green ground, and he found that somebody had robbed him. His canteen had gone, his bayonet blade had gone, as had the blade of his entrenching tool. Come to that, his helmet was nowhere to be found. He didn't remember having that when he woke up, although he did find the strap around his neck. Blimey! They'd even taken the aglets off his boots and the nails out of the heels. All the bits of steel. And what was very odd was that even though his canteen had gone, what was actually missing was the steel flask. There was the stitched leather container lying on the grass, intact. But his paybook was untouched, and nobody had bothered about the few pennies in his kit bag, and even the glass bottle containing his rum ration was still here. It must have been a funny sort of thief. And he still had his paints, but the metal box that had contained the little tubes had vanished. Not only that, somebody had even taken the trouble to unwrap the metal bands around the bristles of his paintbrushes, so that the little bits of stubble were left lying at the bottom of the canvas bag. Why? And what about his weapons? He checked the pistol at his belt. All that was left of that was the wooden stock. Again, why? Steal a pistol, yes, but you would have a devil of a job to use it without the stock. It made no sense. But then, What did? Where on the Western Front had good sense ever played a part? The Russians watched, silent, apparently baffled by his fiddling about with all this stuff. Memory came trickling back from whatever foxhole it had been hiding in. Private Percy had been seconded to the Camouflage Corps after his leg wound. This was because, amazingly enough, the army had recognized that he had once been a draftsman, and sometimes this army, who needed men who could hold a gun, and even more, men who could take a bullet, also needed men who could wield a pencil and select from God's good rainbow just the right hue of paint to turn a Mark I tank into a harmless haystack, albeit with a wisp of smoke coming out of it if the lads were having a quick drag behind it. He'd been happy for the respite, and that was why he carried a paint box, for colour matching, and for bits of fine work after the usual application of daubs of camouflage green. What else could he remember? The very last thing before the shelling? Oh yes, the sergeant roasting the new kid, because he had one of those wretched testaments that fitted into his breast pocket. The kind of thing mothers and sweethearts sent to the front in the hope that the holy words would keep their boys safe, and maybe, if words alone did not do the trick, then the gunmetal coating might achieve what mere faith could not. And Percy, packing up his gear to go on to the next job, remembered the sergeant was apoplectic, waving the offending article in front of the kid and screaming, "You bloody, bloody idiot! Ain't your bloody mother ever heard of shrapnel? There was a sapper once, a good lad, and a round hit his bloody iron testament, and it drove the living heart right out of his body, poor devil." And then he had been rudely interrupted by the shelling. Why had the red-faced kid and the sergeant disappeared into the incandescence of a bomb, which hit only a little way away from Percy, who was now sitting here, in this peaceful world, in the company of these friendly-looking Russians, and still managing to hear the wonderful birdsong? Deep inside, Percy knew he was never going to get answers to such questions. Best not to ask, then. The Russians, sitting there in the green, watched him patiently as he struggled to climb out of the black pit inside his head. When the two Russian hunters returned, one of them was carrying a freshly killed deer, a big floppy animal, with apparent ease. Having the carcass of a deer dropped right in front of him by a huge furry Russian might have perplexed a lesser man, but Private Percy's brief adolescence as a poacher and years of near malnutrition on the front line combined firmly around one purpose. The butchery was a messy job without steel, but the button rod in his small pack was thin brass and helped a little, and so did smashing the bottle that had contained the last of his rum ration, to make a few more cutting edges. He was disconcerted by the way the Russians ate with their bare hands and carefully picked out the creature's guts and the lungs, what Percy had grown up calling the lights, and crammed them into their mouths. But he took the charitable view that the poor souls probably knew no better. He saw no steel, and certainly not any rifles, and that was odd. After all, the Russians had come to fight alongside the English, yes? Surely they would have had guns of some sort, because what was a soldier without a weapon? Light dawned for Private Percy. Of course, some might say that he was a deserter, although heaven only knew what had really happened to him. Maybe these Russians were deserters. They had surely flung their weapons away and kept only their enormous hairy greatcoats, and if that was so, why should Percy worry? That was their business, and the Tsar's. So he took a venison steak for himself, diplomatically walked away to avoid staring at the Russians' table manners, found some dry grass, pulled some dried twigs off some half-rotted branches of a fallen tree, and used one more precious lucifer to light another fire. 5 minutes later, as the steak cooked, they were sitting around him as if he had become king himself. And later, when they walked away with him, singing as they went, he regaled them with every music hall song he knew.